Think big. Think positive. Never show any sign of weakness. Always go for the throat. Buy low, sell high. Fear, that's the other guy's problem. Nothing you have ever experienced can prepare you for the unbridled carnage you're about to witness. Right. Super Bowl, the World Series, they don't know what pressure is. In this building, it's either kill or be killed. Right. You make no friends in the pits and you take no prisoners. No prisoners. 1 minute, you're up half a million in soybeans, and the next, boom, your kids don't go to college and they've repossessed your Bentley. Are you with me?
Hello and welcome to Turner's Take. I'm your host, Craig Turner, author of the Turner's Take newsletter, also a broker and consultant with StoneX. I focus primarily in grain and oil seeds, and the group that I work with here in Chicago also has expertise in the energy markets, dairy, and livestock. If you have any questions for me, please let me know. You can reach me at 312-706-7610 or email craig.turner@stonex.com. If you like the podcast, please go over to iTunes, wherever you get your podcast, and give us a positive review. You can also check out the show notes for the newsletter. And if you're a client and you hear anything here, you know what we're talking about that we need to do, you can always contact me. You should have my cell phone. You can call that or text. Anyone else interested in working with us, please reach out. So let's get into it. I was actually in Kansas City earlier this week at the Soslin Purchasing Seminar. That was very interesting. Got to hear some great speakers on some of these markets, whether it be the ag and oil seeds or in proteins and livestock, all the way to weather and economics and crude. I think probably one of the more interesting ones that I heard was on the economy. And the speaker there was talking about how the Fed views interest rates and how it's different than the rest of us. And what he was saying is the Fed views interest rates in terms of what's known as real interest rates, where they take the Fed funds rate and then they subtract inflation, which in this case would probably be CPI, which is about 4.9%, that core CPI number, and they come up with an inflation number, which could be positive or negative. So if interest rates are 1% and the rate of inflation is 8%, then the real interest rate's negative 7. But if interest rates are 5.25 or 5.5, like they are now, 5.25, and inflation is just underneath 5, then real interest rates are just barely over 0, maybe by a quarter to a half a point. And that's how the Fed looks at interest rates. And I found that very interesting, because if that's the case, then the Fed probably thinks they could keep on going higher with interest rates, because only now are interest rates above the rate of inflation. That's going to be interesting, because the Fed will have a meeting here next month, and the expectation is they either hold steady or raise by a quarter again. Some people think they'll have to eventually come down due to a recession. But if you take a look at the 1979, 1980, you did have a recession. The Fed was raising rates and they didn't stop. Like, they realized that inflation is what, you know, it hurts everyone. Basically the less wealth and less income you have, the more inflation hurts. So the Fed is probably, with inflation being low, with unemployment rates being low and with economic growth being okay, maybe we go into a mild recession, be the longest recession I can ever think of. But it really does feel like that the case is being made here for the Fed to keep interest rates higher and elevated for longer than maybe some in the market think. So that was a very interesting way of looking at things. And when you also, just in terms of like a macroeconomic aspect here, we've been keeping an eye on China, and China has been experiencing real deflationary pressures. So with China here, you know, when you take a look at their PPI and their CPI and their manufacturing, you know, some of it is getting down into negative territory, which I found very interesting. We are already hearing about lower growth through China, but also lower demand in South America. For corn and soybeans, there's not a whole lot of demand coming to the United States. from China either. So we have this kind of macro backdrop where China is maybe not even just in recession, but actually feeling deflation, which is definitely going to have lower consumer demand and lower demand for goods and services outside of China, including corn and soybeans and wheat, whatever it may be. And you know, we have the Fed most likely keeping interest rates high because they're concerned about inflation. And you know, having a recession at the end of this year and going into the first quarter next year on paper makes sense. We'll see what really happens, if it's a soft landing or a hard landing. And I think that certainly remains to be seen. But there is going to be some kind of a slowdown. And at the end of the day, you add all that up. That's never great for commodities. It's not good for the energy markets in terms of price. It's not great for corn, soybeans, and wheat in terms of price. We'll just see lower demand. You're going to see a lot more lower energy demand, you know, when you have a recession like that. But you'll even see lower grain and oilseed demand, not so much on the food side, but sometimes livestock gets too expensive, beef gets too expensive, pork gets too expensive. You can see a little bit of a cutback on that in the margins. You'll see a little bit less corn and vegetable oil for energy because the energy demand just isn't there. And in the margins, you'll see that kind of lower demand. And I think that's what we're looking at. So, which brings us into the WASDE. The WASDE came out today. It's June 9th. We had our June WASDE. It's usually a snoozer, and it wasn't a big deal today. What the June WASDE tends to do is adjust demand numbers. They rarely comment on production. It's usually too soon for production. July WASDE is when I would expect them to be adjusting yields. And you don't see them adjust yields in June unless something very big has happened that, you know, it's obvious that yields are going to be lower or something like that. And that really hasn't happened yet. We're still in a weather market, and, you know, we could rain all next week and yields will be back up to trend line. I don't think that's going to happen at the moment, but, you know, that we're still too early for that. What the USDA did do, though, is take down old crop demand, which makes sense. All these themes we're talking about with lower economic activity. So we do see in corn and soybeans and even a little bit in wheat, the demand coming down a little bit and for old crop. And then what does that do? That pushes up ending stocks for old crop. Your ending stocks, also known as carry out for the old crop, becomes the new carry in for new crop. So old crop carry out becomes new crop carry in. And if the old crop carry out numbers are going higher because demand is coming down, well, then obviously the new crop carry-in numbers, our starting point for the new crop year, has to be higher. And even when you keep new crop demand and new crop production the same, your ending stocks go higher because you're starting off the year with more. And that's what happened today. And I think the market was expecting that. There was no big surprises. What's interesting about July is we'll get more color from the USDA on where they see demand. We'll get to know where they think yield estimates are and if they need to be changed either way. We also get information on the wheat market by class. So new crop wheat has just been all wheat numbers. USDA does not start breaking it out by class until July. So that's a good reason to tune into the July WASDE also. You know, going forward here, we're about 8 minutes in. This is not going to be a long podcast here. I'm going to finish up just talking about a couple of different markets from the spec side and also the hedge side, whether you're basically a producer or a consumer. On corn, when I take a look at corn or any of the spring crops, clearly there's a risk in the short term to the upside with the weather. It's hot, it's dry. The weather models are not in good agreement. You can make the case we could have rain next week. Some models have it in there, some don't. The GFS is a little bit wetter, but hasn't been as accurate as the European and Canadian model. It's all this stuff going on. There's also some very well-respected weather guys out there that think we will get rain in the last half of June for the Midwest and then throughout Canada in July. And we'll have pretty close to trend line crops. There are plenty of newsletter writers and analysts out there that are saying that you can take trendline yields off the table already as of June 9th. I don't know about that. We'll see. The technology for the C technology is just so good. I mean, I understand where they're coming from, but I'm always shocked at what some timely rain or a good shot of rain could do to any crop, and it's only June 9th. So we'll see how this goes. It is Friday. At the moment, it's hotter and drier. We got all weekend, and we're going to start trading these markets like a traditional summer market, where if it's hot and dry over the weekend and the forecasts turn hotter and drier, we gap open on Sunday night. But you can also get the opposite effect. We could rain over the weekend, or the forecasts get a lot wetter and cooler, and we gap lower in the overnight. On the downside risk, let's say we have the weather improves. I think the market at the most, the biggest downside risk would be corn. Because as soon as you start improving the corn yields, you really start piling on to that carryout, and you go from an adequate to almost burdensome crop levels. So my concern, so the downside risk in this market is probably new crop corn. So if I'm a farmer, I'm looking at things like buying maybe short dated puts in August. It gets you through the end of July, then we know where the crop is. And maybe you can do that in combination of selling a far out call, which might be a very far out price target for you in December to kind of help offset that. That'd be an interesting way to manage that risk, and something that we could do here on the desk and that I have been doing. Another limited risk way to probably play this market is the cost of carrying corn. The cost of carrying corn is close to 10 cents now, because remember, the cost to carry per month is storage costs plus insurance costs plus interest rate costs. And it used to be, or when we had zero interest rates and insurance was fairly cheap, all the per month, the cost to carry was really all locked up in storage. But now that interest rates are higher, the interest rate cost for carry is basically sent corn from a $5 per month cost to carry to a 10 cent cost per month per carry. So if I look at these, I guess in theory, full carry in these 23, these 24 corn is like $1.20, but we never get to 80% on the market anyways to the full cost to carry. It's very rare we get past 80%. So even if it was like 80 or 90% cents, still high. I mean, just to give everyone a frame of reference, before the interest rates started going up, 50, 60 cents in corn year over year was considered full carry. I mean, now it's going to be probably, just because of interest rates alone, $1 to $1.20. These corn is sitting 20 over, I want to say, or right around there. I mean, we could be 20, 30, 40 under by harvest if we have a 2 point something carry out, stock to usage 15% or higher. Like, that could happen. So there are ways, whether you want to do the long-term spec trade, or if you're a farmer and you need some kind of coverage, but want to hedge your bets a little bit, and instead of selling all the cash now or selling the futures, buying the short dated put, or maybe being bear spread new crop versus red new crop is a way to take a look at it. And that'd be for the farmer and the longer term kind of trader. If I am more of a short term trader, or I'm a buyer of commodities, a buyer of corn, whether that be on the feed side, the ethanol side, food and beverage, whatever it may be, manufacturing. The odds are commodities eventually go back to the mean, and the mean for corn is probably somewhere around $4. And here we are, new crop $6. I'm sorry, old crop $6, and new crop's $5.30. And we are going to have a lot of acres, and we are transitioning from La Nina to El Nino, and things really should start getting better. So if I'm on the buy side, if I'm a short-term trader, I'm probably looking at maybe these weather rallies. And weather market is a tradable market. I mean, you can do that in the futures. You can do that in the spreads. I kind of like the short-term options, because if you do get weather markets, you usually do get some pretty big spikes. And then if I'm a buyer of commodities, I mean, you've probably by now, if you're dealing with old crop, we're probably covered. And hopefully don't have to buy any more old crop. And we can just focus on new crop. And if I'm just focusing on new crop, and I'm a company that has to buy corn, whether for whatever reason, you're probably you're probably making small purchases, but letting the market come back to you, because we have had high prices for 2 to 3 years. And eventually, you know, eventually commodities do go back to the mean. And I would think, based on a 2 billion carryout, corn would be somewhere in the mid fours, if, you know, in for next year, if we do get that crop. So that's kind of how I see the corn market. I think the biggest risk to corn right now is to the downside. While soybeans is a little bit different, it's a little bit more neutral. You want to take a look at the soybean market. We're up today. It's led by soybean oil. There is an interesting development going on in the soybean oil market, and that concerns renewable biodiesel and what qualifies for oil to use in renewable biodiesel. And as many of you may know, palm oil does not qualify, but soybean oil and canola does. One thing that also qualifies is used cooking oil. Now, the thing is, this is a very new industry. It's a new process. We're putting new rules into place. I think there is general confusion about what qualifies in terms of used cooking oil. Is any kind of cooking oil that's been used can be used for renewable biofuels, or does it have to be soybean oil used, or is it to be canola used? Can it be a mix of oils? Can it be canola and soybeans combined? What if there's some palm in there, right? It's still, you know, what happens? It's still used cooking oil, but it has palm oil in it. And I think some of the oil coming over from China that was classified as used cooking oil maybe start getting disqualified because so much palm is in it. And if that's the case, then we're going to need more soybean oil and canola oil for renewable biodiesel. And I think that's why we're seeing some of the rally that the recovery we've seen in soybean oil recently is this thought that maybe there isn't as much used cooking oil supply as originally thought, because so much of it may have palm oil part of it. So right now, I think the beans are up. It could be a little bit weather related, but it's the oil that's leading all the markets higher. So it could be more so to do with the renewable diesel and changing the equation there a little bit, and much less the weather or on the demand side. Regardless, old crops getting close to 14 again, new crops at 12. We have a 52 yield on soybeans. If we have a 350 million carryout, I don't know. I mean, maybe new crop is 10, 10, 50, 11 bucks. That sounds right. You know, on a carryout, that's all, you know, that could be close to 400 million, especially if demand keeps on coming down. And it's China that's having probably one of the bigger issues globally with their economies, because they're in a deflationary state, which is a lot, you know, which is certainly worse than just being in a plain vanilla recession. So it's just something to, you know, to keep on there. And then in terms of wheat, my position has not changed in wheat at all. I think we're going to have a ton of soft red winter wheat. We increased acres by 15%. The conditions look pretty good. We're going to go from maybe a tight slash adequate market in soft red winter wheat to adequate slash burdensome. That's why you see soft red winter wheat trading at such a discount to high protein wheat, because high protein wheat's going to be tight. That Kansas City wheat does not look good. We're going to be tight. It's going to be a very poor crop. Jury's still out on spring wheat, not just for the Dakotas, but also Western Canada, which is a major producer of spring wheat. And one thing we will know, though, is even though things are tight in the high protein market in North America, it does pencil to bring in wheat from Europe, specifically Germany, if we're trading around 850. In the wheat market for hard red winter wheat and soft and spring wheat. So if we remember back to 2017, and this is a while ago, you have been listening or working with me for 6 years if you remember this, but we thought that spring wheat had a shot of going to 10 bucks back in 2017. And I remember liking wheat in like $5-$6 range, thinking that would eventually go to 10. And we topped out at 8. And why did we top out at 8 and not go to 10? Because the stocks to usage implied $10 based on how tight we were compared to years past. But what happened was when it got to $8, it started to pencil to bring grain in from Europe for high protein wheat into Europe. And the years past, when we looked at years past, and the ending stocks for the U.S. implied $10 in spring wheat. The other part of the equation was there wasn't other grain available to come from outside parts of the world because the rest of the world was tight too. The major exporters were also tight. The United States was tight. Therefore, this very tight stock to usage suggested $10 back in 2017 for spring wheat. But as soon as we were able to import from Europe, which was new for that year, we basically topped out whenever that wheat was penciled to come over. And I think that's the same for spring wheat and winter and spring wheat and hard red winter wheat this year too. We did see wheat come in from Germany around 850. You know, that's when we started to hear the rumors. So I just think it's going to be hard for spring wheat and hard red winter wheat to break through the 850, 875 into 9. Like that area is going to be difficult to trade into if we know there is plenty of European wheat at the moment, particularly from Germany, that can come into the United States. So that is kind of our view on the wheat market. So I'm glad. Listen, hope everyone has a great weekend. Thanks for listening. Happy to talk to anyone that has exposure to these markets and we can put on a plan. Feel free to reach out anytime. And again, I just don't deal with grain and oil seeds here. We have a lot of experts on the desk that deal in the energy markets, dairy, livestock, meats and proteins, and then my counterparts on the other side of the firm and also in other parts of the United States also. We have experts here in interest rates and currencies, plastics, if you're in the manufacturing side, things like that. So have a great week, everyone. If you need anything, please contact me. Otherwise, I'll talk to you soon.
This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniels Trading Broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniels Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors, such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore, investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniels Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniels Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.